spending some time, shall we say, engaging in different dances with different individuals. And we're going to hear all about that in just a moment. Hello, everyone. This is Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. I am very pleased to introduce to you Anne Reichart, who is the author of the new dance card, Looking for Love Online. Anne, welcome back to this edition of Mind Talk.
Thank you, Pamela, so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, Anne, you were home one day living your married life, just assuming that life would continue as it had. And your husband of 30 years, I believe, came home and announced that he was done with the marriage and he wanted out. Is that fair description?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I was definitely shocked. Actually, I thought he was kidding. But over time, I found out he wasn't kidding, and he pretty much picked up and left. So it was quite an emotional and unexpected event that happened in my life. And not only me, but so many other people since I've been divorced. It's been 11 years now. And, you know, I find that there's so many of us in a similar situation. And I was 56 at the time, and I thought, oh, my God, my life was over. And what was I going to do? I had a third of my life left. I was in a couple society, but I was no longer in a couple society anymore. And now here I was, a single woman. And what was I going to do for the last third of my life? And I really didn't know, because I, you know, grew up in an era where, you know, you married someone and you were married for a long-term marriage. But that wasn't to be. So I eventually picked up the pieces and I decided, well, you know, I need to get out there again, because I felt so much like a leper in my new life. Because once you're a single person, it's interesting, you're never really included in the couples groups anymore, whether that's going to events, you know, athletic events, musical events, movies, whatever. So I thought, well, gosh, you know, I need to find someone. And I wasn't desperate. But I thought, well, I better investigate how to do this. So I went to the online dating scene, basically, and that's what my book is about, dating through the new age of technology, which means online dating. And that was 11 years ago.
So it's interesting. I mean, your life changed literally in a second, and all of a sudden you weren't a couple, you were a single in a lot of different ways. And at that point, online dating was the way to go. It's even more so nowadays. But when you had just begun to date, online dating was not a thing. But at that point, it was really a thing. What did you think about that? I mean, it just seems like it would seem so odd.
Well, it was really odd, and I have to say, you know, I found out that the online dating scene probably started 8 to 10 years before I began, and that would have been in 2006. So, but it was one of those things that was secretive. People didn't want to tell others that they were doing the online dating scene. It was a negative. There were a lot of negatives that were associated with online dating, for sure, because it was new, and certainly not the way that, you know, we knew how to date back in, you know, my era. But as you say, today it's exploded. I mean, there are so many different sites since I've been on there, and I started off, you know, with Match.com, and that's the most common, and everybody knows about it. And all ages are jumping into this dating pool. It's just unbelievable. It's a billion-dollar industry, and it's really provided a lot of young people and old an endless supply of people who are single. And, you know, we don't have that, gone are those days where you'd, you know, meet somebody at church or a local supermarket. Or, as I point out in my book, I remember going to recreation halls where we would have dances, and we'd meet up with guys and dance, you know, different ballroom dances with these different gentlemen, and then we choose who, you know, who we kind of like. There were very few options back then, but today with the digital world, there's a lot of options. But there's also a lot of data to filter through, because you have to sort through profiles, and profiles are pretty much a a dossier or a sales pitch about who you are, what you're looking for, and they put up a picture, and basically I would have to say the picture drives more interest than the profile ever would drive a person, because after all the years that I have been dating, and I've dated over 100 guys, and when I say dating, it might mean a coffee date or a luncheon, I've only had maybe 3 to 4 gentlemen that I've really been interested in, and it really had a lot to do, and I hate to say this, with the superficial at first. It drove me to that person to want to be with them a little bit longer and then obviously get to know them on a deeper level. But it certainly is the photograph that drives the person to the other person.
Well, you know, for those folks who don't consider themselves to be particularly attractive, that's kind of a scary commentary on their likelihood of success in the world of dating.
True.
Digital that's dating, at least.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But what I found, there's somebody out there for everyone. Now, my parameters may be totally different from Susan down the street, who would prefer maybe a younger guy that was burly, you know, liked to ride motorcycles, or, you know, was into that sort of scene. Whereas my parameters were totally different. And there are gentlemen out there that, you know, I would prefer athletic, intellectual, professional, and that have a value system, and certainly you find out more about that person after you've dated them for a certain period of time. But getting back to your point, we're all driven by looks to begin with, and that is what I found out from so many other people that have been online, the young people, the older people, and you know who we find attractive is very different. Who I would find attractive would be different from someone else.
That's very true.
And that goes for the gentleman too.
Let me ask you a question. Do you recommend, particularly in a situation where you've been in a long-term relationship and you find yourself suddenly single, do you recommend a period of healing before launching into the digital dating world, or do you think it's better just to go headlong and see what comes up?
Oh, absolutely. My first message is definitely finish your grieving process, because with any kind of loss, whether it's through divorce, widowhood, or, you know, any kind of loss, there is a grieving process, and everybody takes a different time frame to, you know, get over this grieving process, and I have to say it took me 2 years, and so the message here is you have to let go of the heartache and the wounds, and throughout this grieving process, there's anger and grief, and you have to resolve your issues first and be ready and be happy with yourself independent of someone else first. That's number one. It took me, I have to say, about 2 years to get through my grieving process, but I did not even realize that. I jumped into this dating scene when I was newly separated, and what happened to me, Pamela, and happens to a lot of people, is that, you know, our self-esteem is so low, and the first person that comes along and, you know, we feel like they're boosting us up, and we feel so good again that they are going to be perfect in line with who we would want in terms of a long-term relationship. Well, I jumped into that first guy that I met online, and I had a relationship with him 2 years, and it was wonderful at the time. It was perfect for me at that period of time, but it wasn't for him, because he was ready to get into a marriage situation. He'd been divorced for 19 years. He'd already gone through his grieving process. I had not. And what I discovered, too, is, you know, when you're with someone, there are different phases. Well, let me just backtrack here first. He wasn't right for me. I understood that after maybe an 18-month period, because obviously you find out more about that individual and what you have in common. And your parameters, like I had listed earlier, he didn't fit a lot of those important selective parameters that would fit in my life. And he was a wonderful man, great heart and soul. He didn't have the intellectual or the educational background. We didn't have communication. It was terrible. And, you know, certainly I want to get back to this. There's several stages that happens when you first meet someone, and I'm just going to touch on two, but the first one is the passionate love. Obviously, you fall in love with love, pretty much. And the biology in our brain, we kind of spew out this dopamine, and so it's a feel-good time. And, you know, it's like a drug, but that potency kind of fades after time, and they statistically have proven that it takes 12 to 18 months for the brain to return to that normal non-dopamine phase. And then as that passionate love fades, the companionate love enters in. And then, you know, we focus more on the specifics of the individual and how they will fit within our life, you know, as far as cohabitating. And a lot of times it just doesn't work. I cannot tell you the number of women I've talked to who say, yeah, we were together for 2 years. At that two-year mark, it was over. It's just, it's really quite a phenomenon. So I guess my point is that you have to be selective and know what you're looking for and know who you are first, because that's number one. And, you know, identify styles and personality. Are they introverted, extroverted, athletic, religious? There's just a plethora of things that we have to look at within a person. Now, there's no ideal. I want to point that out, but we can come close. And I think we can't just settle for the first person or the second person that comes along. And I think in my book, what I pointed out is it's taken me a long time to understand all of this and identify these specifics in order to, you know, to have a successful relationship with someone. And don't jump into anything too fast. Don't be unrealistic about your expectations about a long-term partner. I mean, what is the core of the person that you're looking for, their value system? You know, another interesting thing that I found at my age is that it was very important for me to date somebody who'd been divorced or widowed, but mostly divorced, because they could understand what it was like to go through this horrible, horrible situation. And it is horrible. I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat anything. And so you can relate on that level. And also, do they have children? I have kids, and I want them to understand the joys and also the challenges that come along with having kids. And, you know, if you're going to join a family or become a blended family, you have to be able to, you know, accept that and then be able to, you know, discuss issues that come up. And only someone that has had kids can understand that. And another factor is stage of life. You know, do you want someone younger that's not retired? I'm retired. I'm 66 now. And I want somebody that is going to be free to maybe travel and do some fun things. I mean, I've worked all my life. Now I want to have a good time, and I don't want to wait around for someone that has to work for another 10, 15 years. So those are, you know, those are a few things that I sort of touch on.
Those are also, though, those are the result of careful thought and realistic thought about what is truly important to you, which is very different from what you think you can actually get. And a lot of times when people focus on what they think they can get, that falls very short of what will actually work for them.
Exactly. That's very true. And, well, it's been 11 years. Nothing's really worked for me, so it's kind of interesting, but I was not going to. I learned a lot along the way, and that's the point. You know, take those steps to understand, you know, what is the best scenario for you. Now, a lot of people jump into a relationship and they're successful, but I don't know, how are they successful down the road? The majority of women and men that I've talked to, and I have to say, you know, you reach a point in life where, you know, I've become pretty comfortable independent of having someone in my life. And I'd question whether I really wanted someone to invade, I don't know if that's a good word, but come into my space, because I've already set my, I have a pattern here, and I'm enjoying my life, and things are going really well. And certainly there are moments where I'm missing that partner. But what will it be like when that partner enters into my life? I mean, is it going to totally change the way I do things? I mean, we all evolve. Some evolve and some don't. Some people are static. And I like to keep evolving. So I guess I have to find someone that's going to be willing to accept that and evolve along with me. You know, do you want somebody that has those traditional roles back from the 50s, you know, where they have a career and, you know, you're the one that stays home and does all the cooking and whatever, you know, that's the era that I kind of grew up in, but I'm not there anymore and I don't want to be. So, but I do think human beings don't want to be alone at the core. We want a companion. And I mean, you even see it in prisons, you see it in elder sex, you know, in nursing homes. I mean, I was a nurse for 35 years and I used to work in nursing homes, so I'd see it all the time. All the time. So it's human nature that we want to have someone in our life. And but I don't know, is the formula changing as we get older? I see younger couples entering the dating scene and I don't see a lot of commitment. The need for commitment is kind of dwindling. Marriages probably are going to go along. I don't know. I just am seeing a whole different scenario in terms of relationships with the younger people and even the older ones, because like I said, a lot of guys that I've met ideally say they want someone in their life, and then when you reach a point where you're dating for a period of time, they really don't want that. They want to go out and see what is out there that might be better.
It's so interesting. You know, there was a time when, and there still is for many people, when having a partner was sort of like the main course. That was your full meal. And now, in a lot of ways, it's more like the dessert. If you have it, great. If you don't, well, that was a lot of calories anyway.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I guess personally, you know, I came from a family of 9 kids. My parents were together for 73 years plus. So that was my norm. So everybody's norm is totally different, obviously. So I'm still looking for that because that's my mindset. I am still looking for that. And I don't see that in a lot of people, other people, that at least my friends and contemporaries, I can't say about everybody. But like I said, ideally we are looking for that ideal personality or person that's going to be our soulmate, you know, so they say. And I don't think it's out there. I'm not going to be negative about it, but I think we have to be realistic in knowing that this is a journey. This takes a long time to figure out if you're going to be happy and successful in a relationship. Now, I have to say that I have found a guy. The first person I have found or really feel is going to be fit into my life. And this just recently happened, so I'm going with the flow. I'm not going to be unrealistic or idealistic, like I say, because I have been pretty guarded along the way, and most of us are, you know, after going through a kind of a traumatic experience. And it's been 11 years. I know I'm over it. That's not even what the book's about. But actually, my book's kind of humorous. I just wanted people to know what it's like to online dating.
It is.
And the pitfalls that, you know, I kind of went through. And you know, my journey really, it's not necessarily a bio, but it's the topic that's so familiar to so many of us. And it's rarely conveyed in the manner that I convey it, because I kind of like to draw the analogy. It's like having a baby and you're totally exhausted by being up all night, you know, hours crying and oh, there's no assistance from your friends and family, and they swore they're going to babysit and help you, and it's really miserable. I mean, it's miserable. It's not all joy. But then you talk to other people about how their baby sleeps through the night, and they never have heartache or sleeplessness. And I'm thinking, you know, mine is more authentic. It's reality. This is what really happens in life. And if people were more authentic about, you know, what they've experienced rather than idealizing a situation, I think we'd all benefit.
I think it would be a lot more useful. And we're going to take a break. But when we come back, clearly this is entitled The New Dance Card. Your first book, The Dance Card, you met a lot of different gentlemen and you talked about those experiences. When we come back, I'd like to ask you why you chose to revisit some of those dance partners that you had years back. So that's where we'll pick up when we return. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We'll be right back. Why revisit your old dance partners?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question because this is what happens when you're online dating. You know, you connect with a lot of people, and then you think that if you've had a date or two, it's over with, and then you're not going to see that person again. Well, let me tell you, down the road, it can be 3, 4, 6 months, even a year, if you've exchanged phone numbers or they have your contact information. You'll hear from these people again. Now, I'm still hearing from probably, I would say, 6 out of the 10 guys that were on my first dance card. And occasionally, you know, during a holiday, they'll say, how are you doing, Annie? You know, want to catch up? You know, do you want to chat? Or are you dating any? Have you found the love of your life? And that continues. It's the craziest thing. You don't expect it, but they do re-enter your life. And there were a few of them that I point out in my second book that I continued a relationship with because I just felt that there was a possibility. And obviously it didn't work out, but I kind of delineate how our relationship started in the beginning in my first book and where are they now, because it is a curiosity. Since writing my second book, none of the 10 guys that I had dated over, let's say it was the first 8 years. I didn't date them for 8 years, but throughout the first time that I met them and then 8 years later, none of them had found anybody to become their partner. None of them. Now, since I would say in the past 2-3 years, and I'm seeing this through Facebook or through their messaging or whatever, that 3 of them are married now. So they have found someone, and I always, you know, reach out to them and I say, congratulations, great. It's finally, you know, I'm glad you found somebody that is going to be perfect for you, you know, in your life, even though we weren't. And I just find it fascinating how you can revisit a person and how, and you think about, could the potential be there the second or third time around? And you try. I mean, you try because you look at all your parameters, and they might check the boxes, or, you know, 5 of the 10 boxes, in hopes that maybe a few more of those boxes are going to be checked the second or third time that you're dating these guys, and you find out they aren't, or they will. So that's why I revisited them, and obviously in my second book, none of the 10 dancers really worked out for me. And they never would have, but I needed that opportunity to find that out.
So it sounds like you needed to sort of put a period to those relationships for your own mind.
Yes, and they did too.
Okay.
They did too, because they reached out to me as well. They thought, well, maybe there's a potential here, And certainly there were a couple that, you know, I did have intimate relationships with, and, you know, in hopes, but it just wasn't working. And I guess that's the point. You do have to date a lot, and I'm not saying you have to go out and sleep with everybody, because you generally know, you know, if you're going to have any kind of, I don't know, connection is the word, I guess. Initially, you really do. And if there's any chance that you feel like it could go somewhere, then you want to date some more, because obviously there's more in-depth that you want to get involved with a person and, you know, their life. And we all have history and memories, and, you know, that is a part of who we are now, and that's important to understand, you know, where they came from in the beginning. So you have to give that a chance for sure.
Let me ask you a question. There are so many dating sites out there. Some are free, some are free for the moment, some are... how do you choose a site, and do you choose more than one?
You know, I found that, Match.com was the one that everyone really kind of gravitated to years ago, and they still do. I would say that's probably the number one, just because you have just a plethora of men and women on that site. However, I have been on a couple of other sites, and you'll find the same people on those sites, because they're thinking, well, maybe there's, you know, there are more options on, the other site that I was on is called Zoosk, and I'm not sure if I can talk about it, but I guess I can, because it's public. And it's an okay site, but for whatever reason, I don't know. It the type of guys that are on this particular site are a little less, I'm not sure, maybe it's because I've moved to Arizona or the Southwest, and just the type of person out here is totally different from the Midwest, because I was originally from Wisconsin. So there, and that's another point I have to, oh my gosh, the where you are demographically really has a lot to do with the different personalities in men and women. Definitely.
Okay.
And how they approach you is very different, and what they're really looking for is different. And I hate to categorize everybody as being a little shallow out in the Southwest, but there are a lot of California people that have relocated, let's say, to Arizona or, you know, the Southwest, and they're, you know, they're financially well-to-do, and they, you know, they have gotten whatever they wanted in life, and they think they feel entitled many times. And so there are a lot of games that are being played, so it's almost as if, well, okay, this one isn't working for me, so I'm going to choose this next girl because she's prettier, or on and on and on. And when you do meet them, they say, oh, well, I'll call you back. And here it is. You know, you might be the most gorgeous person in the world, and all of a sudden, you know, you meet this person, and you are not what they are looking for in terms of their parameters. So it's a curiosity for sure. It's a real curiosity.
Well, speaking of game playing, I have to bring up Mr. Hustle, and we won't go into great detail, but I was somewhat amused and horrified.
Me too.
You know, he had an interesting way of introducing himself. I was amused when his wife, who actually died of cancer, contacted you. She was resurrected?
No. Oh, no, no. Yeah, she was resurrected. Well, this is the story that he gave, and there's a lot of scamming out there. I do know that. You have to be careful, because you can kind of tell, you know, in their profiles, how they write the profile, and if it's all too good to be true, it is too good to be true.
Okay.
And this guy presented himself as being the ideal individual. He was handsome, tall, athletic, you know, intellectual. He was professionally and financially secure. He was ready to move on with his soulmate and the person that he loved the best, that he could, you know, provide this wonderful lifestyle, and that he had been widowed. His wife had died of cancer, and he had to raise these 4 or 5 kids or whatever. And, you know, so it was the poor me situation. And women are very nurturing, and we're drawn into that. So I was drawn into that. I felt sorry for this guy. And, well, as it turned out, you know, long story short, his wife hadn't died. She was still alive, but they had been divorced. He had abused her. He was married again, so his second wife actually came into the picture and tried to sabotage all that he'd been doing in terms of he was scamming these women. And it's a really long story, but she was able to connect up with a lot of the women that he was scamming. And he, you know, essentially his whole idea was to, you know, it's an ego gratification and getting sexual, whatever, satisfaction out of playing with these women. But he also took from them financially. So if you have a vulnerable woman and really falls for this sort of thing, you know, you end up, you know, supporting this person and giving them money, and that's basically what he did. Terrible.
How do you determine whether or not the person that you're meeting online, you know, is legitimate or not? I mean, one of the things that I noticed that you said about him in particular was, I think he was the one where, you know, the story that he would tell you, he would almost tell you the same thing verbatim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was memorized. It was definitely something that he had practiced over and over again with probably all the other lovely ladies out there, for sure. How do you tell? That's
how do you
a very
tell?
Good question.
You know, he also wanted you to meet him, mm-hmm. and it was kind of an out-of-the-way place.
It was. But, you know, yes, it was, and another message is definitely have a backup plan.
Okay.
I have sisters, and I have lots of friends that I would always tell if I had a little gut feeling that something was off here, but I really wanted to go forward with this and see, you know, see who this guy really was. You really have to protect yourself. I know it sounds stupid, but when you reach my age or a stage of life, you become a little more fearless.
Okay.
I'm going to say fearless. And so I just took the chance. Anyway, I notified my sister, and I told her that this is where I was going to go, but I had a gut feeling that something was wrong, and so she was there to back me up, and certainly it was wrong. It was all wrong, and I got out of there as fast as I possibly could.
Actually, it doesn't sound stupid. It sounds pretty smart.
Well, no, that's very smart, but I mean, just the fact of you know, taking that step of moving, you know, getting in my car and driving somewhere to meet this person. You have to do that. I mean, I'm sorry. A lot of people maybe starting out in this particular dating scene will not be fearless and even contemplate doing that. But I never had a problem with it. Maybe it's me. I don't know what it says about me. But those were important things for me to do. And if I, you know, if I felt that, well, maybe there's a possibility here, I was going to venture out, and I did. And I had a lot of, I made a lot of mistakes, and I learned a lot along the way, and I certainly will, as I've always been careful. But I know there are situations where people find themselves in a not so wonderful situation. So there is that too. I haven't come across a lot of them, I must say. Most of the guys, if I read their profile, generally, you have to read the profile first. And if you're interested in talking to them, then you exchange messages via the site. And then if you feel comfortable with that, you can exchange your contact information. And that's how you get to know a person long before you decide to meet. At least that's how I do it. And even if it's for a coffee date, which would be you know, just a couple of hours talking to that person, getting to know them. And you know pretty well right after that if you're going to have any kind of connection. And they do too. But in terms of looking at their profile and really dissecting it to the point where, well, is he a scammer? Hard to tell. It is hard to tell.
You know, it also speaks, I think, to the importance of having your own self-esteem intact when
True.
You start to venture into the world of digital dating, because you really don't ever know.
No, I was talking to a friend the other day who's been on the dating scene now for just a couple of years. And to begin with, she said, you know, I'm getting smarter now. I feel more confident. I'm not quite as nervous about, you know, meeting people. I have this integrity and independence about me that it's not a big deal anymore. Whereas when she first started, it was oh my gosh, questioning everything. And it was just really, it was a daunting task for her. But it does get easier as you go along and you feel a little more secure, like you say. You really do. Pamela, I hate to say this, but it is a game. It's a game that we are all playing.
Okay.
And it's an unfortunate game, but it is probably the only way that we're able to meet people. It's amazing. I've done the dog park. I've done, gone to church. I've never been set up by a friend. You know, you'd think, well, I've got the single guy friend. That's never happened to me. So what do you do? Now, I'm not saying that having to be with a gentleman is number one on my list, because I don't get up in the morning and think, God, I got to be with a guy and I need to date this person. And some women and some men, they have maybe four or five dates in one day. I've never, ever done that. And it's to me, that's a game that they're playing. You know, who's going to be the best? It's like playing a board game. And I guess my point is, if you focus on just, the need to be with somebody, that doesn't always work. And obviously, I haven't, because I've been single for 11 years. And if someone were to come along, like this new gentleman that I've met, who I think fits pretty much all the parameters for me, and I fit for him, it goes both ways. Do we want to join forces and, become a couple and maybe possibly live together? Those are all things that will take time. I'm not going to jump into anything because I want to be a couple. No way. That's never going to happen. And I think that's very important for people to understand that. But you also have to remember, I'm retired. I've had my family. I've had 30 plus years of history and memories, and I don't need to be married and have children and like younger people are thinking today. So the urgency isn't there anymore. You see, you just want a companion, and you have to have chemistry. I'm sorry, there's companionship chemistry, and you have to be you have to be able to compromise when you're with another person. Are you willing to do that? A lot of people aren't. I don't think I was for a while. I wasn't ready to compromise having someone enter my life. And then after that, obviously, comes commitment.
How do you choose the things that are important to you in a partner? How do you come to that decision?
Well, I think it's just inherent in who you are and how you were raised. That's a good question. We correlate our habits and our traits to, what our familiarity is. Now, did I compare to my ex-husband, the guys that I was dating? Is that good or bad? I did. I compared his traits, the 30 years I was familiar with, to the guys that I was dating. Not that I wanted a cookie-cutter guy that was going to be like my ex-husband, but I wanted some similar traits. As odd as that may sound, that's kind of where my beginning was. I'm from an educated family. We were all professionals. That was important to me, too. I knew that I wanted someone that had some kind of intellectual, not a super intellectual, but somebody that had some education. So communication on different levels would be there. And I have dated a couple of gents that didn't have that, and there was zero communication. And can you imagine being with someone forever and ever for the rest of your life and not being able to talk about things? That was important to me.
Yeah, communication is absolutely critical.
Critical.
Anne, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's focus on what you identify as the five C's.
Okay.
Folks, stay where you are. We'll be right back and learn what the five C's are and their importance in a relationship. the five C's, what are they?
Well, the first one would be chemistry, and I think I touched on that earlier. Never did I think that being superficial in terms of, you know, looking at a guy's or a woman's picture should be that important, but it is important. It really, honestly, truly is, because for all the single women and men that are out there that I've spoken to, they have a certain ideal about what kind of woman they want to, you know, what she looks like. And if she doesn't fit that, they're just going to look over her. So that's number one. And, I mean, the looks, but the chemistry comes second. Now, I don't know if there's a biological component to that, but there are pheromones that are, you know, emitted when you are meeting a person, let's say for the first time, and you know, wow, there's some chemistry here. There's a connection. And then there are others that there's absolutely nothing. So that's kind of number one. Obviously, compatibility and, you know, being selective and knowing the things that are important to you, like I've talked about so many times, identifying styles and personalities of the individual, and being able to relate on more levels, maybe deciding factors in who we choose, you know, a person's internal values become important. That's after the outward superficial aspect goes, obviously. But because we are all evolving and we all change, we're not all going to be looking, you know, like, you know, a beauty queen or a handsome hunk from, you know, the magazines. So, you also have to recognize that some people are evolving continually while others are very static. And so are you compatible with that? Are you willing to have someone that's just going to be sitting on the couch all day, or do you want someone that's going to be active and get out there and, you know, do things that are energizing? And that's important to me because I'm from an athletic family. Communication. Well, obviously that's a big one. It's huge. If you are not on the same level in terms of talking about different subjects and interests, that keep you stimulated, then it's just not going to work. And there are those that are that aren't talkers, and then there are those that are. I mean, here you have your radio show. You're a talker. You like to investigate things and talk to people that have, you know, interesting subjects to talk about. And for you to sit there and have to listen, not hear anybody respond, it has to be difficult. So that's the same thing in a relationship. I think if you're sitting on the couch and you're doing all the talking, you're not getting anything in return, that's difficult. Compromise is huge. You know that we are all not fitting into the same sort of mold. So we have to understand the differences and be prepared to accept them, and they have to accept your differences as well and compromise and, you know, how you're going to live your life and, you know, in many aspects, for sure.
Compromise is a challenge, though, I think.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
You have to know what you're willing to compromise and what you're not willing to compromise.
That's exactly right. And are you willing to compromise? If you're not, then you shouldn't be in a relationship, because there's always going to be that challenge.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you have to make that determination. Do you really want to have the anxieties that go along with, you know, having another person in your house, you know, after you've had a successful life and you've got, you know, in order to be a couple? I mean, do you really want to have those challenges? And the people that are so set on being a couple will accept those challenges. And certainly it's not going to be, you know, an easy road 24/7, for sure. But that, you have to be willing to compromise and know that that's going to be part of the situation if you are going to be a couple. And the last one, did you want to touch any
yes.
more on that?
No, the last one.
Okay. Yeah, the last one is commitment. Obviously, if all of those fall in line, you're going to be willing to commit to someone, just like I said, if you're able to compromise in terms of having someone into your life again and the changes that will go along with that, you know, you're ready for the commitment. And many times, and this happens more often than not, I'm seeing in my generation that not many men are willing to have the commitment. Women are, but men aren't. They say they do, but they're having fun in their independent single life, and you know, dating a lot, and it's something they probably didn't do, you know, when they were younger, so they're really kind of sowing their oats, as you say. So they, you know, they're really not looking for commitment. Now, there are a few, obviously, but the ones that I have encountered, they say they do, but they don't.
Well, you know, there's commitment and there's commitment. So it's really important, and this sort of ties back in with communications, that the two of you may be using the same words, but do they have the same meaning for each of you?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Well, that's something that you touch on, too. Well, I'm committed to you. Oh, and that's happened to me. Are we dating? That's another word that is confusing. So we're dating. So what does that mean, that we're committed to each other, you know, alone, and there's no one else involved? Well, a lot of men, dating means they're dating a lot of women.
Right.
You're not the only one. And that was an eye-opener for me since I moved to the Southwest. Dating, gee, are we dating? Yeah, we're dating. But you're not the only one that I'm really taking out and enjoying. And so a commitment also can mean, well, I'm committed to you, but I don't really want to live together and I don't want to get married. We don't need that paper, but I am committed to you in the sense that there's nobody else. That's what I'm taking away from the guys that I've talked to that about. But so that commitment really is difficult to do. It's difficult.
Absolutely.
It takes a while to even reach that point.
Or I'm committed to you on Thursday between 5 and 9.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. That's more of the dating term, I think. But, yeah, that's true. Oh, my gosh, it's so funny. I don't know. It has been a journey for me, and it's been very edifying. You know, it's been humiliating, obviously, and yet I've been able to redefine who I am as a person. And because, you know, here I was a nurse for all these years, and now I'm writing these books, and I'm thinking, who would have thought, you know? And I thank my ex-husband for that. I think, geez, you know, thank you so much. This has been very interesting. Thank you, but no thank you. We, by the way, have a very good relationship, which is phenomenal. And, you know, because we have children together, and that'll never go away. So, you know, our communication is still, it's pretty deep and interesting. That's been a fascinating thing for me also. And I, like I said, I'm continually comparing him to the guys that I date. Now, that might not be a good thing, but I do. That's just what happens.
Probably not all that fair.
Probably not. Probably not.
But it's working for you for
right.
Now.
But I'm honest about it, and I can't not be that way, because that's just how my mindset is working. Now, obviously, I've, you know, changed that a little bit along the way, because no two people are exactly the same. But I, you know, I respect him so much, and we had a life together that, you know, it wasn't all bad. Obviously, there were some issues that that, you know, created this divorce, obviously. But you know, even people that are divorced are they're all good people, and there's reasons behind that. So it's unfortunate that people can't get along after the fact. You know, when you've been with someone for so long, you certainly have a connection to them and a love that should never go away. I mean, right?
You know, it's certainly easier for both families if you're able to have something of a relationship, certainly for the offspring.
Oh, for sure. And that was my prime focus, definitely. And they are happy about that. You know, your children are going to be much healthier if they see their parents in a healthy sort of relationship, even though they're separated. Now, my ex-husband's remarried, and, you know, I like his wife, and, you know, we all get along. I've been to dinner with them and everything. So it's been great for our kids.
Which is really wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful, but that doesn't happen all the time, Pamela.
It's
and
true.
I see these broken
yeah.
families, and it's so sad for the kids, because they can be messed up. So
let me ask you a question. If you have your list of... Well, first of all, you are aware of your values, the things that are important to you in your life, and therefore the things that need to be important in your significant other's life. If he meets much of your core value system. But let's say there's one big thing that he doesn't really have, like maybe he's never been married, which is kind of a biggie. Or maybe he's been married, but he's never had any children. Do you try to navigate through that? Or is that an immediate red flag for you? Or how do you approach things like that?
Well, initially, they weren't red flags. Those are the things that I learned as the years went on. I had dated single guys. I had dated men that didn't have children. And I've dated widowed gentlemen. And I found out that after this didn't work with these people for those reasons, not just those reasons, but they were definitely factors. If I would look for a profile online, if they said single, never been married, I'd overlook them.
Okay.
I definitely overlook them. And also, I've dated guys that have been divorced, married and divorced, but no children. And when it comes to discussing, you know, issues or challenges that I might be having with my kids, they never understand. They
okay.
can't be compassionate about it. And honestly, your kids are number one. And if they can't join in and be supportive, it's just never going to work. So for me personally, I really feel it's important to have someone that understands all of that. Like I said initially, the challenges and the joys of having kids, because they've been through it. And then also, you know, if they're single, they don't know what it's like to be to be married and divorced, and they can't identify with that. So, yeah, those are red flags for me.
And so there are some red flags that you really should pay attention to. I mean, I noticed that you early on in the new dance card, you talked about dating, and you know, maybe there was some challenges, but you tried to put them aside. But clearly, when it's something this important as shared experiences, mm-hmm. it sounds like your recommendation is don't put that one aside. That's really important.
It is important. Yeah, it is important. If you don't recognize these things early on, they will surface down the road for sure, and then maybe it's too late. Now, you know, once again, I'm not idealizing letting people think that there's an ideal person out there. You have to know who you are and what you really want. Do you really want to find somebody that's going to be fit into your life as a couple, or are you happy alone and independent of someone? And those are all valid, you know, and I think today more people are choosing not to be couples. And they can be couples but not married and not living together, but they can still be couples. But there, you know, like I said, you have to, the way I put it, I think I can't remember the paragraph, but it had something to do with the confidence we bring to our relationships and how that outweighs the potential future downfall of choosing a partner or who may be an improper fit. I guess I equated it to shopping for a good pair of shoes. Maybe we would be more successful on the dance floor of life if the size and the fit, the look, the ease of slipping into them every day, and the ability to withstand the elements over the years of wear. Those are all crucial elements in formula for comfort and sustainability, love, and compatibility. So, I mean, it's kind of corny, but it does kind of talk to, you know, being a couple and the things that you have to look for specifically that's going to make you happy. Now, if you were to go online, the things that would make you happy are completely different from what I'm looking for.
Very
true.
And I
hear that from other women time and time again. Mm-hmm. Oh, Ann, you put your heart on your sleeve. You've got to be a little more guarded, blah, blah, blah. And sorry, but they kind of crucify me in many ways. But I'm thinking, well, I'm taking all these steps to figure out what is going to be best. I'm going to be selective. I'm not going to just choose just anyone.
Right.
And they are too, but what they are looking for is completely different from what I'm looking for. It's really fascinating. It's really interesting.
And it's fine. And that I think that's one of the take-homes from the new dance card. Be clear about what it is you want, But know that that's what you want. And it doesn't have to echo what your neighbor or your friend or your buddy wants for themselves or thinks that you should want for yourself.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, if I end up with someone, awesome, but I'm going to have to deal with all the challenges like I've discussed. And that's a choice that I will have to make and everybody else. And if I don't, Pamela, that's fine too. I mean, I've been alone for 11 years pretty much, and my life has been full. You know, there are moments of sadness, obviously, when you aren't with someone, but you know, it's not the end of the world either. I guess that's what I'm trying to point out.
And I think that's so critical, because when you're just, when you feel as though there's a hole that you've got to fill, you know, the tendency to fill it with whatever walks past is much greater and much more unhealthy. And of course, you have to be clear that, do you actually want a marriage? And you've said that repeatedly. Do you want to remarry? Do you want to date from afar? Do you want to, you know, what is it that you want? And I think for many women in particular, the idea of focusing on what it is that she wants very often is a brand new idea, or at least a challenging idea. And we could talk about this forever, but we can't. So tell us where we can get more information about the new dance card.
Oh, thank you. It's on Amazon.com. I have it at Barnes & Noble, Kindle, Apple iTunes, and I do have a website you can go to. I've got little teasers about my book. It's www.loveonthedancefloor.com or Ann Reichart at the Dance Card.
And Ann, can you spell your name for us?
Ann Reichart, AnnReichardt.
.com. Terrific. And thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for the new dance card, Looking for Love Online.
Thanks so much, Pamela. It was my pleasure. Have a great day.
You as well. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. You can download Mind Talk on demand by going to mindtalk.org. Again, that's mindtalk.org. You can download the free Mind Talk app from the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to Mind Talk. So send me an email with your questions or comments. Let me know where you're listening to Mind Talk. And send that to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, well, then it's unacceptable. Take care.